real-time check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
Well, it's your first psych of the Friday afternoon, everyone, and John Hansen filling in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch here on this hot, hot Friday afternoon. Got a lot to cover here today. We're talking about people ghosting on bosses just as much as they ghost on dates, apparently, and also Chicago being the Silicon Valley for food and beverage. That's what's coming up in the next 60 minutes, brought to you in part by the American Weathermakers. Heating and cooling, the 60-minute man. But we're going to start things off with our good friend Ben Meyerson. He is from Blue Sky Innovation. And Ben Meyerson, first of all, congratulations. How's the happy new dad doing?
Oh, the happy new dad is doing well. The baby is doing even better, and mom is doing great as well.
That's great, John. That's awesome news, and I'm sure grandpa's pretty happy too.
He is indeed.
Charlie doing great. Okay, let's jump right into things because we got to talk about President Trump has a new favorite guest at the dinner table out of Wisconsin, out with Harley Davidson, in with Foxconn, right?
Yes, Foxconn, the big technology manufacturing company responsible for making iPhone after iPhone. It's been reported a while ago that they're coming to Wisconsin. They're planning to build a big old plant there that's going to make those LCD screens that power all your phones. And they did a groundbreaking ceremony yesterday, and Foxconn officials were there, as well as the president himself.
Before we get to the feud with Harley Davidson, let's talk about Foxconn just a little bit more, because they're anticipating big employment gains. 13,000 employees might flop over from Illinois up to Wisconsin. A lot of more money being invested. But some people are concerned that the state and local governments are putting way too much into this deal, and people aren't going to get as much out of it as they think they might.
Yeah, so there's 13,000 people total working there, some of whom could come from Illinois, just to clarify on that point. But 13,000 people, still nothing to sneeze at there on a 22 million square foot campus. But yeah, the state of Wisconsin and some other folks have really thrown a lot of money at this thing. $3 billion from the state of Wisconsin.
And that's billion with a B, in case you didn't hear.
Billion with a B, yes. And $764 million in funding or in incentives from the local level. Now, a lot of those are tied to incentives, like hitting job marks, wage, wage goals, and other investment in the community. But if all that goes through, and I think there's a couple other triggers in there that could bring that total number up to $4 billion.
Wow, and a little nugget from the president's visit. He's been feuding with Harley Davidson. It just seemed like yesterday he was refusing to ride a Harley on the White House lawn, but welcoming Harley Davidson to the White House. And now with the situation with tariffs and Harley moving or threatening to move factory operations, or at least some of them, over to the European Union, they've really fallen out of favor. I wonder if that is just a word of caution to businesses that if you go against the president's economic policies, if you're going to feel the wrath of his Twitter account.
It'll be, I think we can definitely count on feeling the wrath of the Twitter account. How much it'll actually affect the way the company does things remains to be seen. But it's definitely very interesting who's in, who's out in terms of Wisconsin manufacturers.
It's been a very interesting month, to say the least, for Walgreens. They announced that they're going to be moving some offices to the old post office, which goes over Congress and the Eisenhower, of course. And then they join the Dow Jones Industrial Average earlier this week. They've got great quarterly returns, and then they promptly lose $6 billion in value yesterday. Ben, walk us through what happened.
Yeah, so Walgreens had a great quarter. They reported their earnings yesterday morning, and then about 90 minutes after they finished telling investors just how great things were, Amazon dropped the bomb that they were buying a pill startup or a medical startup called PillPack for about $1 billion. Their stock was down 9.9% yesterday, and it did not recover today.
The obvious, the concern being, of course, that Amazon, which has taken over so many brick and mortar operations with the deliveries for groceries, deliveries for anything, the fact that they're even getting into the pharmaceutical game, even if it's not a major overhaul, is it just worrying that this could bemoan the future of Walgreens and maybe CVS's and other things that rely so heavy on pharmaceuticals to boost their revenues.
Totally. And, it's really hard to get into the pharmaceutical industry just because it's so heavily regulated. But buying a company that has a foothold there, I think the worry is that potentially Amazon could take what's now a small startup and leverage it into something bigger. But a lot of analysts are saying that this is an overreaction by the market. That we got an analyst at Morningstar, the great analyst, analytical group here in Chicago that called it a huge overreaction, and saying they're making it to be a bigger deal than it actually is.
The market overreacting, Ben. I'd never heard of it.
I know, right? And the press, too.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about offices making us hangry. First of all, I'm very familiar with the hangry feeling. I'm feeling it coming on right now. Explain, Ben, to those who may not know, what exactly does hangry mean?
So hangry is a word that may or may not have been invented by millennials or for millennials one way or another. But it's basically, it's self-explanatory. It's when you are angry and hungry at the same time. Now, but there's a new study here that says that from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, that shows that those same chemicals that you get or that run through your brain when you are hungry, they can be agitated when you are also they can be increased when you are agitated for other reasons, and then of course that makes you hungry again, and it becomes kind of a a vicious cycle, if you will, of your hunger and your anger playing off each other and creating a big monster of sorts.
Is the idea to eat a little bit more before you go to work or snack throughout the day, or just try and find some more positivity with your bosses?
I think all of the above would be great. I'm pro nuts. You know, I always have a bag of almonds or cashew something on my desk, try to prevent myself from getting too hangry and creating the zen-like atmosphere that I like to show off to my coworkers when I'm off and chatting with them during the day.
Well, you might not be getting as much sleep moving along in the future. Ben Meyerson, reporter of Blue Sky Innovation. Congratulations, Ben, and thanks for joining the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand on this Friday afternoon. Fridays are already great, but when I get to see Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network, they get even better. Tom, thanks for coming in today.
Holy cow, what a welcome.
I know, holy cow. Speaking of that, going to the Cubs game a little later in the day.
You're the luckiest guy I know.
I know. Okay, so let's talk about ghosting, not on a dating perspective. I think that's a word that a lot of people know, where you engage with someone on a dating app and you say, maybe we're going to meet up, and then you just don't show up. And I thought that was pretty exclusive to the dating world, but apparently not, Tom.
Well, it's interview. It's jobs, it's going to work, right? I mean, now what we've gotten is the lack of formality, the casualness of society as a whole. So it's not ghosting on social media for dating. It's not ghosting at work. It's ghosting in everything.
So you see it as a social contract.
Yeah,
this is part of the culture we have now.
Exactly right. I think this is people are confirming interviews for jobs over text to begin with, right? So you're texting a boss that I can't be into work today instead of sending an email. Where what did we used to do? Make a phone call,
right?
So it's a heck of a lot easier to fake sick over a text than it is to pretend you have a cough and a cold when you pick up the phone. Everything's gotten easier to, you know, air quotes, cheat the system, right?
Yeah, but it has to be contributions to the low unemployment and that the tables have turned a little bit. Do you not agree to that argument?
No, I do. I think that there's low unemployment, so people interviewing for jobs don't feel that they need to. There'll be another job right around the corner because everybody's looking for people, so you can take more risks and you really don't care. There's a more of a laissez-faire attitude about getting a job, but I do think it just mirrors the ease of technology. People don't care.
The thought of ghosting for a day or something like that, I mean, that's nothing new, but we're talking about ghosting where people stop showing up for work entirely for a job they already have. But the one I find more surprising is they're reporting ghosting of people that have gone through the hiring process, have been hired, and they don't show up on day one.
They don't show up for work.
How much money does that cost a business? Obviously, without knowing the size of business, but it's got to be
substantial.
You're talking
tens of thousands of dollars because you put recruiting efforts in. So if you're going through for a typical position, John, you interview 10 people, you get 5 finalists, you narrow it down to 2, you hire one. You've let those last 4 finalists go. You've let the runner-up go.
Right?
Now you got to go eat crow and try to get them back, if they're even willing to, or start the process all over again. You're talking tens of thousands of dollars in manpower, plus advertisements, plus recruiting fees, all of those types of things. And the reason people do it is no one wants to have confrontation, right? So the candidate doesn't want to call you up and say, you know what, I was interviewing for 2 jobs, and I accepted yours, and the day after I accepted, they offered me the job, and I really want that one. People don't have the wherewithal, the guts to call up and have that conversation.
I agree with you in part, but I want to not challenge you, but ask you about this, because I was finding this in the LinkedIn article that I was reading about this too. The notion that the tables have turned a little bit in that so many young people after college, coming out of college, and young or old people too, in 2008, you know, they would go in, after they lost their job and we had higher unemployment, they would go interview after interview, and employees aren't the best, employers, excuse me, are not necessarily the best at letting you know if you didn't make it to the next step, if you got or didn't get the job. Do you think that that might be built in, that there's this disdain for the employer that has been manifested, that is now manifesting itself in people kind of turning the tables, just saying, hey, I can get a bunch of different jobs. You employers messed us up for years, and now the tables are turned.
I think that's a little deep, John.
Okay.
So is it tit for tat that the employers don't give me what I want communication-wise when I'm interviewing? And I would say that happens to an extent, but I would say more along the lines, and there's plenty of corporations out there, any corporation is based on the value of the employees.
Right.
Right? And so no one knows if I'm going to call somebody back or not. The president doesn't know if a hiring manager is calling back somebody for a clerk position to tell them they're out.
Right.
Right? So you are at that, but I just think people have gotten to the point where they're so conflict averse, and because of technology, the amount of face-to-face and even voice-to-voice that you have has removed that whole equation, and they just think, you know, it's not as bad as ghosting, but I can text you that I'm not accepting a job.
Right.
I can text you that we're not giving you the job. That's terrible.
Right, especially when in these business worlds, they're smaller than people think. And this article mentioned people that ghosted them and then tried to reapply for jobs or other jobs at other companies. And companies talk to each other. People know each other. They're able to put names down of people that do this, and it could hurt you in the future.
There's no reason not. Listen, the coward's way out is the email over the phone call, right? So take the coward's way out. It's really not a big deal to say, I just wanted to let you know I've decided to change my mind. And whether it's an interview or whether it's for an actual job or to quit or be absent, it's the easiest way to be honest and upfront. And what you said, to spare your reputation.
A lot of people listening are going to roll their eyes and say, I bet it's only millennials that are doing this. And
oh,
I bet it's only low-income
so wrong.
Jobs. But yeah, so it's not.
Staff level, college graduates, executives, baby boomers, Gen X, everybody has defaulted to, I don't have to. And I think you're right. It might not be for 2 or 3 years with this economy, but it will turn around.
Yes.
And when people remember that you ghosted me, and that usually plays out in other arenas as well.
One element that I found interesting that companies are doing to combat this, especially bigger ones, is to have kind of rolling hiring periods where even if they don't necessarily have a job open at that moment, they're in the hiring phases for people to fill it. I imagine that that's something that they have to do
all day long. And what companies are having now, it's very common even in smaller firms, is they have a database where they keep everybody that's applied or gone through the process, and they put notes in it. They know. Oh, John Hansen. Oh, let's look at that. Oh, he applied, and then people remember.
Don't say my name out there, Tom. That was not you could have just said.
He didn't show up, but it was at
Bennett
the Cubs game.
That's who Bennett Wignight is.
They went to the Cubs game instead of going to work. I mean, what's up with that?
I know. Tom, hey, always great stuff to chat with you. Have an awesome weekend, my friend.
Yeah, let me know when you replace Bertrand full-time.
I did not say that. Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network, thanks so much.
Good to see you.
And we'll have news and more Winter's Business Lunch coming up after this on 720 WGN.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I think everyone remembers December 7th, 1941. FDR labeled it as a day which will live in infamy. Of course, Pearl Harbor, which led to the start of United States involvement, at least militarily, in the war against the Axis powers. But on December 6th, 1941, the day before, it was the start of Weigel Tool Works. What incredible timing and just an interesting nugget of history. Aaron Weigel joins us now. Aaron, did I get those dates right? The day before Pearl Harbor.
The day before Pearl Harbor, that's correct.
And it was your grandfather who started it.
That is correct.
And your grandfather was German, right?
Yes, he immigrated from Germany about a decade prior to that and got into the business and just started it up.
So when the company started, talk us through what you guys did and what you guys do now, 76 years later.
So my grandfather immigrated from Germany. He went ahead and started the business the day before Pearl Harbor was bombed because he was working in a competitor company and thought he can do it on his own. So my grandmother financed him, and he went ahead and did that, and it's just flourished since then. He started off building tools for customers locally, and then in 1968, my dad got involved. He served four tours of Vietnam, and then he got off, got out of the Navy, and started working with my grandfather. He then transformed the business to go from just tool and die making to now getting to metal stamping, which is what the production of all those dies that we produce, and that's pretty much our core business today.
Can you elaborate what metal stamping is? When I think of that, I think of like a metal like label on a plane or something or a tank, but it's much more involved and technical than that.
Much more involved. So what metal stamping comprises of is we'll take processed materials of coils of metal, and we'll put them through a mechanical press, or now they have technology with a servo press, with a die that was designed and built by us, and that will transform the metal where you're cutting, you're forming, you're coining, and producing components that customers are giving us blueprints on to produce, mass produce in large quantities.
I don't know if you're allowed to give us any of the names of the companies you work for or customers, but you're more than welcome to here. But yeah, what sorts of customers do you guys have?
Well, they go into all automotive components. I mean, I don't think there's a car made today and mass produced that we don't have components in. So
really?
We have a lot of content in a lot of cars, especially now with the way the cars are evolving more to be smart cars and having the sensor technology, vision systems, and backup cameras. And you know, the types of metal that we process are all copper-based products that have a lot of electricity going through, and so that's where we're seeing a lot of our growth.
You mentioned all these new technologies in cars and stuff. Does that have an impact on your business? Do you guys have to be nimble and change, or is the core of what you guys produce remain the same for decades?
We adapt to tooling techniques, but as far as the product lines are concerned, we don't get into product design with our customers. They give us the products that they want us to mass produce, and we'll come up with the designs and technology to mass produce those components.
You say that a lot of your competitors have gotten rid of making tools in their shops and turned to outsourcing. Why have you guys not done that?
It is a core competency that makes us a world-class supplier. I mean, I find that the marketplace, even though they want to have low cost and everything, they want to make sure that you can go to one facility to do the whole thing. And now we're talking about prototyping, designing, and building the tools and then mass producing, so it's kind of a one-stop shop, and it's an expense. I mean, it's hard to maintain because you know we don't see a lot of skilled labor getting into the trade, and so you know one of the things that we're leaders around in the area is trying to get more people into the trade and training them with this skill set that hopefully it doesn't get lost in the mix here, because a lot of them are not getting into this trade.
With unemployment continuing to creep downward, obviously people can pick and choose between jobs. Do you guys find that you are continually hiring skilled workers, or you need more workers, or do you guys find that your employees are happy and they stay?
Our turnover rate is 1-2% a year.
Really?
It's excellent. We've got a very good family environment. So the retention of employees at Weagle Toolworks is phenomenal. It's getting new people in, and it's not because of anything other than the fact that what you just described, you know, unemployment is at record lows, and I think that I would say all companies, all industries are all striving to try to get the labor into their companies, and we're struggling with that as well.
Yeah.
It's one of the long-term issues that I have with growth. I mean, so that is a concern of mine.
All right, I got to mention, I have to correct myself. It's Weagle then.
That's right.
So I work for a company called Weigel. So that messed me up.
Well, Weigel is pretty famous around here in Chicago. Tim Weigel. Yes.
So
that's why I get the Weigel a lot. I'm kind of used to it now.
Weagle Tool Works. Okay, when you think of these companies, especially in the industrial atmosphere, you sometimes think of not good environmental partners, but you guys pride yourselves on being friends with the environment, as you say.
Absolutely. I mean, with now the certifications and audits that we have with all of our major customers. We recently just got certified with the IATF 16949, which requires us to be environmental friendly and make sure that we are conscientious of what we do with how we process our scrap, our trash, and all that, so that we are complying with what all the OEMs are directing.
Now, 76 years ago, you said it was Grandmother Weagle who helped Grandfather Weagle start up the business. But obviously, in this day and age, you need help along the way, and Wintrust has been a great partner for you guys.
They've been fantastic. I mean, with the growth that we have, you have to have the financing to back it up. And you know, I hear a lot of people want to call banks just a commodity debt, but I look at them as a very, very strategic partner. I mean, you know, when I got involved with them, it was a very easy transition. I mean, I dealt directly with the president, and I've got tremendous bankers that I've dealt with over the last 8-9 years. They assign you bankers that know the industry, that know your business, and they see what type of financing that you require in order to grow your business, and that's where I'm at today. The bankers that I've had assigned to me has been phenomenal. They're well equipped to help me grow my business. And you know, when I first started with them, I think I had 2 plants at a time and 39 employees. Or we're up to 140 with 4 plants.
Wow!
And now I have a joint venture set up with an international company too. And I could not have done any of that without the backing of Wintrust and their financial help.
Weagle Toolworks, that's Weigel Toolworks.com. You can request a quote online or give them a call, 877-338-3064. Aaron, thanks so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Plenty more coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Suburban corporate campuses are becoming a thing of the past. BP's 85-acre Naperville campus is for sale. Yes, I said 85 acres, where they have four whole buildings to sell, and like many others, they're moving their employees downtown. All right, time to speculate. 85 acres is a great development opportunity. That will be expensive. It's not like these plots of land are just going to become vacant. Something will go there. Someone just has to think of the next big thing that will bring in the big bucks. And speaking of the big bucks, financial media platform Tastytrade just secured $20 million in a Series C round of funding to take them to the next level. They're a West Loop-based startup that provides 8 hours of live trading and financial content every weekday, but also allows viewers to use their brokerage software platform to trade on the fly. Talk about seamless. They're a one-stop shop for beginners and experts alike, with the 100 employees working to shake the financial world. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch here from the Allstate Skyline Studio. I'm joined now by Alan Reed, the Executive Director of the Chicagoland Food and Beverage Network. And Alan, thanks so much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we're hearing that Chicago is soon going to be the Silicon Valley for food and beverage. What does that mean, Alan?
Well, we've all heard of Silicon Valley, and we know that it's a center of technology. We've heard of Wall Street. We know it's a center for sort of finance.
Right.
We've all heard of Hollywood. It's a center for entertainment.
Silicon in other ways, exactly.
Absolutely. But here in Chicago, one of the things that we do really, really well, and sometimes those of us here take it for granted, is we're a great food town. We have amazing restaurants. We have amazing food and beverage companies. And all we're trying to do is pull all of those pieces together and start to get some of the recognition for what an amazing, amazing area this is, just like Silicon Valley's recognized on the West Coast.
So when we talk about the Chicagoland Food and Beverage Network, you know, that's what I think when I heard Silicon Valley, I didn't know if that meant just new restaurants opening up, or is it tied to new companies and technologies that connect food distributors and all sorts of things?
Well, so we're mostly focused on sort of the center of the supply chain. Those are the manufacturers, distributors, and marketers of food and beverage products. So a lot of our members are currently kind of consumer packaged goods companies. There are 4,500 companies in food and beverage here in the greater Chicagoland area. It accounts for around 150,000 jobs. So it's a big deal in terms of the economy. We seek to just link those together and make some greater things happen. Again, some of the energy and excitement that happens around Silicon Valley, around technology, we want some of that same excitement around food.
So when companies start, or when they're just getting going, or whether they've been going for a long time but they're looking to change their ways, sometimes you're on your own little island. And is your network a way to kind of connect the dots and make sure the right people are talking to the right people?
Absolutely. The number one reason that companies are joining is because they want to stay on top of the exciting changes happening in the food and beverage industry. Things are changing really quickly. It wasn't so long ago that people didn't know what paleo or gluten-free really meant, but those kinds of ideas are really changing what's happening in the marketplace. So we see big companies, small companies, and everywhere in between really coming together to make sure that they understand what's happening, what consumers are looking for, how the market is changing, and how they should play.
Chicago's obviously a big city, big metropolitan area, so I understand why there's great restaurants here in town, there's a history of it, but what makes Chicago such an attractive place for these businesses?
So first, we have a huge infrastructure. We have, you know, attorneys, accountants, consultants, agencies that all know a lot about the food and beverage industry. Other cities don't have that, to be honest. We also have a great amount of talent with the number of large food and beverage companies here. They've developed large groups of talented individuals who are ready to work on other companies.
They're already here,
Also, we're really sort of a crossroads. The Midwest is often called sort of the breadbasket of America,
right.
in some cases the breadbasket of the world. A lot of food business transpires in and around Chicago, and a lot of it is transported through here.
Yeah, it's fascinating because when you think back centuries ago, or even earlier in the last century, you know, obviously we had the stockyards on the south side, the movement of food, and obviously the farmland and the agriculture. But that still exists today, even though the stockyards are gone and technology has changed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we want to lean into Chicago's amazing history in the food and beverage industry, but also make sure that we have an incredibly bright future as well as the as industry changes.
I imagine you guys also advise that these companies are good social partners, environmental partners. Do you guys play a role in making sure that they are or helping them to reach those goals?
So absolutely. So we're actually a 14-month-old not-for-profit.
Brand new, yeah.
Our job is to bring together these companies both to grow industry, but also to do great stuff here around Chicago. This is address big issues like hunger, unemployment, economic development, and a variety of other issues as well.
Yeah, got to be all partners with each other, especially if you're in the community, got to be a partner of it.
Absolutely. And we are finding terrific companies who are deeply involved in the community and ready to do more.
Alan Reed, Executive Director of the Chicagoland Food and Beverage Network. I am getting hungrier and hungrier as I speak to you. We didn't even talk about food exactly, the food on our plate, but man, I can't wait to get some. Alan, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.